Today is September 26th. My name is Emily Jacobson. I am interviewing Adeyemi Olorontuba, who served in the United States Air Force. Do you want to tell me a little bit about how you decided to enlist?
My enlistment was something that just came from, not something that I planned for. It came out of the blue. I remember I came to the United States as a transfer student from Nigeria in Africa. And when I was rounding up my program as a senior, I started receiving so many letters from different branches. And they were recruiting, and you know, I felt like, as a Nigerian at the time, I don't even know it's possible. But after going through the whole thing, meeting some of them, I realized once you're a resident, you can actually become, you can join the military. So, and since I know I will be around for a while, so I just decided to try it. So I met several of them. I fell in love with the Air Force as the recruiter presented the case to me. So, and I said, definitely I still want to go to school. Having a degree is not just my mission. I want to go as far as I can go. But at the beginning, I really want to go to medical school, and I was having challenges as an international student paying through medical school. So I said, okay, I'll serve the country as well as they will also serve me. So that is why I decided to join. But along the line, I found out that because I know I had a degree and I was supposed to be an officer, but because I was never a citizen, I could not be a commissioned officer. You have to be a citizen to do that. So the option left for me was to go through the enlisted. So that is how I ended up being an enlisted personnel. And with the intention that once I came in, then I will be able to expedite my citizenship and go back to the officer's school. Mm-hmm. So that's how I end up being in the enlisted section of it. So ordinarily, as much as I wanted to be in the military, I would have loved to start as a commissioned officer, probably second lieutenant, since I already had a degree. So, but what it did to me was, because I had a degree, I started as a senior airman, which means I have a... senior airman. I have like two ropes, the way people call it. We call it insignia. So that gave me an edge over ordinary person. So I took the test. I was the best in the state of Michigan. So for my class, I was the delegate that led people that was going to boot camp from Michigan to San Antonio. That's where we had our military training. So that is how I ended up in the military.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose the Air Force?
I chose the Air Force because I saw it as one of the branches that you have opportunity to climb up. Mm-hmm. Because before I ended up joining the military, I was the first generation in my own family. So we had no knowledge of the military. So when the options were presented to me, I started learning about them. And I figured out, you know, as once you are in once you are active, you are actually the talk of the town for the common person. But once you come out of the military, it's like nobody. Mm-hmm. So as much as I was interested in serving, at the same time, I want to come out of the service and also be somebody of honor, of dignity. So I saw that Air Force gave me that platform. Mm-hmm. And after going through all the interviews, but if you want to talk of real, you want to be a military person, you want to think of being in the Army or in the Marine, but once you come out of all this, if you don't have a program for yourself, you come out, you become an entity. So, but with Air Force and the option that I took, I figured that even if I should leave at any time, I could transition into a civilian world perfectly. Mm-hmm. So that was why I chose the Air Force. And another thing is the choice of the job that I did. Actually, before I came into the country, I already had a private pilot license. I went to aviation school in my country, and I have that license just as an experience. So Air Force feel like, oh, okay, this is where to use it. But I realized that if I want to go to the pilot school, then I have to be an officer. So I said, okay, let me just do something that will keep me in place so that when I'm ready to go to the officer school, then there will be no problem. So I decided, I took the test, and based on your score, they want the best candidates to go into finance, because everything has to do with money. And, you know, we work directly with the Department of Defense, where we deal with millions of dollars. So they want people that are really good with numbers to be in that department. So I chose to do that. Mm-hmm. But ordinarily, having my background in science, I studied biology. I really wanted to go to the medical field. Mm-hmm. But I figured out medical field would not really help me to climb the ladder that I really want to do. So I chose finance.
Was it tough learning all the finance information, working with numbers?
No.
Or was it easy for you?
Because for me, anything maths, I don't need to study it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that I'm gifted with. I remember in my country, I was in, like, let me say, what they call sophomore here. And I was already done with like senior maths. So I really don't have a problem with numbers. So that was one of the reasons, because my score in, we call it ASVAB. You know, that is the entry level for anybody coming to the military. So I think my score there made the recruiter to feel like, hey, this is where we need you. And I said, no, this is where I want to go. So he explained why they gave me that chance. I said, okay, if I'm on merit, then let me just be there. And I think when I was working in finance, I realized why you need somebody who actually is on top of their math issue, arithmetic, whatever you call it, because it's just a whole lot. So when I actually end up, even though I was in the Air Force, some of us were selected for a different program because they're trying to do consolidation in the military. So I end up in a place called... I was in a base in Offutt Air Force Base, but I was in a unit called STRATCOM, Strategic Command Base. So, and we work for DFAS, we call it DFAS, which is Defense Finance. We're not really military pay. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody in finance ordinarily is supposed to be in military pay, which is a unit, but that was not where we're posted. So in DFAS, we have, we have Air Force, we have Army, we have Marine, just every branch, they kind of bring some people together to work, to consolidate the idea of finance in the military. Mm-hmm. So that's where I ended up.
After basic training, where did you go?
After basic training, like you say, is basic, which is just military training, history about the military. After basic training for everybody, you go to what we call technical school. Mm-hmm. In technical school is where you actually decide what do you want to do while you're in the military. Mm-hmm. Everybody just think if you go to the military, it's just about boot camp. No. After basic training, everybody goes to technical school. And based on the profession that you are actually picked for, determine how long you spend in the technical school. Mm-hmm. So my basic training was in San Antonio, which is, we call Lackland. That is for the Air Force Base. And after the basic training, I went to Wichita, mm-hmm. which is also in Texas. That's where you get trained with finance. Mm-hmm. You know, different people go to different areas. But in Wichita, which is my tech school, you have so many jobs that people that are stationed on that base, if your job is that's where they sent you. Some people go to other bases where they actually the training for their jobs is. And the training was like, I think it's like... I remember maybe the training is for like 2 months or 2.5 months or 3 months. Because I remember getting to the base in January and we graduated in April, mm-hmm. the 3 months. So that's where everybody goes to technical school. So that is where what actually determines what you'll be doing in the military. Basic school is military science, so to say, about the military history and all those things.
And once you were trained and ready to go,
what happened next? Well, then they move you to what we call the permanent base. Mm-hmm. so which is where you're going to be located. From there, they could take you to anywhere which we call the TDY, temporary duty, but you have a base that you're attached to. So from Wichita, I was posted to Air Force One, because based on your performance, you know, one thing I found out is my record determines where I go. But sometimes when they see you in person, it's a different thing. So I was actually posted to Air Force One, but it came out that when they figure out, oh, you are not born in America, so you are this, you are that, you cannot go to Air Force One. And I feel so bad about that. So I think I challenged the authority about it. I said, well, this job tells me there is no discrimination. So if I'm being picked by my record to go to Air Force One in Andrews Air Force Base, which is in Maryland, so why is it that now you're complaining? Oh, they said there's something called lawful discrimination. And lawful discrimination, one of it is to work in Air Force One, where you actually have access to the people at it, in the government. You need to have what we call a top secret, which is a security clearance. And to be able to get a top secret in the military, they have to look into your record from birth. And I was not born here. So I ended up with a clearance that is called secret. So I cannot get top secret, but they can only trace me from when I entered the country. So because of that, they moved me from Air Force One into Offutt Air Force Base, which is also Intel. In Offutt, it's also, when I got to the Offutt, they moved me to Strategic Command, where I work, which is an intelligence base Offutt. But Offutt is called a Fighting 55th. It's like a fighting base, you know, where they actually go to war. But the unit that I work in is in Stratcom. So the headquarters of the Stratcom was in Denver. But I know before I left, they moved it from Denver to be on one base. Now it's called Strategic and Airspace Command.
How was it moving around the country so much?
Yeah, I love it, because if you are stationed in a base as a military person, you really want to do what you're trained for.
Yeah.
Ordinary people feel like, oh, I don't want to go to war. But we always feel like, hey, I want to go. Most of the time, they don't really force you to go. No. They just tell you, oh, in medical, we need 4 people. In finance, we need 3 people. In this, you know, they let you know. Everybody volunteer.
Yeah.
And when it comes to that, then if they need 3 people from your unit and 10 people showed up, so it becomes the discretion of the commander to feel like, okay, because you have been here for so long, yeah, you should go. Because you're really good in this, you should go. So that's how it works. They don't say, oh, you must go. No. It's on rare cases. Everybody really wants to be part of action. You don't just want to sit on a base. So there are several, you travel around the country, they call it TDY, you call it temporary duty. They need you, let's say, if you're based in Bronx, they need somebody in Manhattan, they come to the Bronx and take you there for maybe 3 months, then you come back sometimes 4 months. Whatever you are there for, once it's over, then you come back to your base. So I do a whole lot of that, and I enjoyed it.
What was your day-to-day like? What were your day-to-day operations?
As far as my job is concerned, it's regular. It's like normal job for me. That's one of the reasons that the recruiter told me. He said, the job I'm giving you that you're going to take based on what you want to do is 8-to-5 job, Monday to Friday. And that was the job that I took. But, you know, when we have major details, all those things don't come into account, because we're told that you are 24/7 military.
Yeah.
So even though your normal job, you go to work at 8, close at 5, it doesn't mean that if there's anything going on, you're still going to be called. So when my normal, regular day is like go to work 8 a.m., close at 5 p.m. So by that, I was able to go to school.
Right.
I have evening classes that I was taking. And those classes, too, they're also on the base. Because you have my base, we have about 10 universities represented. So they have a section in every base they call education unit. So every college that wants to come, they send their professors there, and you just go and take a class. So while I was doing that, because my job, I have an ample knowledge of what I'm doing. So I was able to to go to school and get a master's degree while I was there. And I did it very fast. So the one thing is, once you get to your permanent base, there's what we call OJT, which is on-the-job training. Before you can do any other thing, your supervisor, your unit wants to make sure that you have the mastery of the job that you're there for. So on the job training, it doesn't matter what you learn in technical school or basic school. When you come to the real world, it's different. So now you are assigned with somebody who has been there before, hands-on. So that's what they call OJT. So while you're doing that, there's also an exam that you take to show that now you know what you're doing apart from what you read. So once you're able to pass that exam, then you're free to take any other thing. Like sometimes you want to do another job outside, you have to make sure that your mission is number one. So those are some other things. But definitely regular job, apart from going for special training and all those things, I love it, 8 to 5.
Did you serve overseas at all?
Did I serve when?
Serve overseas?
No. Because as at the time, you know, based on my paper, they really didn't want to take somebody green card. They didn't want to take you everywhere. So that was some of the challenges that I have. So they train you, get you ready, but they want you to go to, I mean, you have to be qualified for it. So I didn't have any overseas training. So but when they finally expedited my status and I became a citizen, by then I was already deep in college. So and if you go overseas, your school stops. So definitely I didn't want to volunteer for any of that. But anything in the area, we call it CONUS, which is continental USA, anything within, then definitely I'm always number one to be picked. But anything overseas, once I'm in school, I really didn't want to do that.
What was your favorite place that you lived out of all of them?
It was my permanent base, because I fell in love with the place, because the other places, you know in your mind, you're just there for a while. So you're not part of this area. But where I lived, that I was stationed, I fell in love with it. I know when I was leaving from technical school, for me, I really don't have any knowledge of where to go. They ask you, you always have options like 8. I don't need 8. Just send me to anywhere. I'm a military person. It doesn't matter how tough, how I'm just a military person. Whatever you think you need me, just send me there. So because there's some people who are used to the whole area, maybe people you can call military brats, you know, so they have choices. And people say, oh, you're going to Omaha, Nebraska? Oh, the only thing you eat there is corn, is this. So for me, I really don't know. And I always feel like wherever you put me, I could make life worth living for myself. And that's what I did. Got into Omaha, and I don't need that to know the city. I just need to know my base. So and I pay attention to what I was doing. My job was first on my mind, take every opportunity to study the job, know it very well, so that anybody call me, ask me anything, I don't need that to be going around. That's what I did. So and with that, it made me focus that I really don't pay attention to other things. But after a year, I decided to leave off base so that now I can mix with the community. And that really helped me a lot because I do so much in the community as a volunteer. And I remember in 2001, I was given an award called Volunteer of the Year for the city of Omaha, and the base commander gave me a lapel. They call it Hidden Hero, which is the highest award the commander could give. So I did that, and everybody was like, how are you able to do that? I said, that's my passion. I love to volunteer. So I belong to so many groups, which the military actually encourages. They encourage such things. Even though you're in the military to do, I was a mentor in school. I was a big brother and in town, you know, just so many of those things. So I did a whole lot of that. And when the Twin Tower fell, I was still active. And, you know, that was the beginning of this, we had the Iraqi Operation Enduring Freedom, which is the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan. That war was only fought by Air Force. Because every time there is war, the really first people to get there is the Air Force. You know, they you know, to strategize what they're going to do and all those things. So when the war started, within 14 days, they gave up. The war was over. So that war was only by Air Force, no any other branch. After that was the Twin Tower issue, and now they declared, the president came. I was one of the people that received him when he came from the ranch to off at Air Force Base. And in Strategic Command, we have a room is bigger than this. It could be as empty, but within minutes, you see the place filled of so many things.
Yeah.
So you could see different countries, different target areas. So he came, they brief him and all those things. By the time you get back to the White House, then issue of, okay, we're going to go to war, setting. So, you know, you're happy sometimes because you are part of the solution. You know there's problem already, but now you're part of the solution. And that's what made everybody feel like, okay, I'm helping my nation. See, the military people are not really, they're not really trained to die for their country, the way everybody say, oh, yeah, yeah. No, from us, we were trained that other people should die for their country, but not you.
Right.
And when you go with that mentality, you want to go to any war. But definitely, you know, it's a 50-50 chance you go, you might not come back. You already know that. But everybody feels it's not going to be me.
No.
So that's why you see people, they go, they keep going. So, but during that period, there's what we call stop loss. They said if you finish your contract and you want to get out, you can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
They call it stop loss. So nobody can get out, regardless of your contract is over. No. So there was stop loss for a whole lot of us. I think by then, I was getting close to finish my contract. I'm still deciding, should I sign up again? But there was stop loss, so you didn't even think of that. So that was the one experience that really stayed on my mind.
How long was your contract extended for?
I think I only had it extended for a month, no, 2 months. Because I was still within my contract when that stop loss came. So it's just that when my contract was over, we still have stop loss. But people that had their contract finished, they couldn't go. So, but for me, I was actually still within the contract. So by the time I was done, I only spent 2 months extra. Then I was able to get out. And, you know, when Clinton was in power, Nebraska was actually the last state that he visited. Because I was, based on record, it was the only state he never visited throughout the first term and towards the end of the second term. So but it was the last state that he came to on an official trip, and it's like, who has set and left the best for the last? Because the people were complaining he never came to Nebraska, which was actually a Republican state. But we have a notable Democrat senator from there. I think something Nelson, somebody Nelson. So I was opportune to meet the two presidents, because when he came, I was one of the people that received him, Bill Clinton, and before I left, the war was already on. So George W. Bush came, and also I was one of the people that met him. So to me, that was something that, you know, it resonated in my mind.
Yeah.
They're your commander-in-chief, but they're just there for title. You really don't see them. But I was opportune to see these two presidents, and it was a big boost for me.
Yeah. How did it feel serving in the United States when the war was going on overseas?
How did it feel?
Yeah, did you feel distant from it, or?
No, we're not, because it's like somebody that is like, if me and you are partners and you're taking, so you feel like you're the one that is there, and we make sure we get in touch every day. You know, signals come, tell you what is going on, what area they would need. Every time we have briefings, every time there's briefing at home, what is going on every week, let's say every Monday, they must get everybody together, because it could be you.
Yeah.
And again, they actually train. You don't just get sent to the war. There's a training. that you have immediately, combat ready. So they could train everybody together. But who gets to go depends sometimes on seniority or the need on the front line. So but while they're there, you know your next in line.
Yeah.
They need more people, they could pick you up. So it's like you're part of the war.
Yeah.
You're part of the war. You know, whoever gets to go, it's like playing a football. You know, even though you know the people on the field at the point, maybe 11, I don't know what number, but everybody in the team know that that is exactly the same thing. But while they're there, there's briefing every day. There's things going on. Somebody get headache, you know right home. Or somebody is going to get pulled out and somebody is going to go, everybody gets to know about it. So in that's what they call the camaraderie spirit. We're together in it. And every day there's briefing. Every day, what is going on, what they are doing, what we are winning, you see, you come back to yourself, okay, this is how far we've gone. And if there is a shortfall, say, this is what is going on, we might need to send more troops, you, get yourself ready. Your unit, they need more people. This unit, you know, everything is good. So, anyway, in the same spirit.
Did you meet other people who were not... who were not born in America, who had signed up for the Air Force, or were you the only one you knew?
No. And I think, I don't know, sometimes, when I came in, even some of the people, the base that I ended up in, they don't know that it's possible. Just like I didn't know before I came in. So when I got in there and now I start working on citizenship because I said, no, I want to be an officer, I'm a graduate. So some of them, the top ranked people don't even know it's possible. So I ended up being a liaison between the Air Force and the Immigration Department. At that time, we call it, I think it's NIS? No, I've forgotten what we used to call the immigration. So I was a liaison officer between immigration and... Because there's a lot of people that are just immigrant that they brought in, a whole lot. Spanish, people from the Caribbean, Africans, a whole lot of people that are just resident. And they brought them in. But because when I came in, they didn't even know. So I became someone that is actually processing their paper. Because if you need them somewhere, without that paper being taken care of, they can't go. So I was a liaison officer for that base with the immigration. So that's what I ended up doing.
And after you got out, what did you end up doing?
When I got out, I remember during the when the train tower fell. I was assigned to there's a bridge. It was an overhead bridge for it's a railroad, but they call those rail company Pacific Union. They're just cargo. So I ended up monitoring one of them while the whole thing was going on because there is fear that okay, this thing could spread. If they bomb that bridge, it's going to be a whole lot of nonsense. That will. So from my base, I was one of the people assigned to be watching on that bridge. So by the time I get done with the Air Force, I already know the people. So I just went back there if I can work. So I got hired as a supervisor to work with them. But I just did that for a while. And then the war was already still, we felt like the war was over, even though we know we still have people. Nobody knows it's going to take this long. But at the beginning, we just felt that, okay, when Saddam was captured, nobody thought, okay, things would be a little bit there, okay. So a lot of us were given opportunity to, if you want to get out, if you want to stay, if you want to get out. So when I get out, immediately I was working with Pacific Union, doing the same thing I was doing in uniform. So, but after a while, I just decided to move away from the city. So I came to Maryland. I was working in Johns Hopkins University. I was working in the hospital as in the radiology lab. After a little bit of that, and you know, I still feel like you know the uniform job. I just want to get back to it. So I came to the city to become a cop. So I was a police officer with NYPD. And while I was doing that, as much as I was doing it, my orientation of it is, okay, I want to help. But police is different from the military. In the police, about who you know. Even though it's a paramilitary job, but is not the same. So I really want to be an officer as much as I want to get involved in the community,
yeah.
Which I did very well in the military, but I didn't see that. I didn't have that opportunity. So I just felt like, okay, you know, after 5 years, I could opt out for early retirement, mm-hmm. even though you're not of that age, but you just wait. So I decided to do that, and I felt like, hey, you know, while I was in the community, people just, as a police, people see you as answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a housing problem, they call you, they have this problem, everything. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, okay, what best can I do to help this environment? So this year, I was a candidate for city council. I ran for office in District 12. Though I was not the choice candidate, but it's good for an experience,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking at my background, that, oh, I can even come here and be this, it was a big win for me.
Yeah.
So, but I enjoy working with people.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, I sit on the, as a chairperson of Community Board 5, I mean Board 12, I live up north. And I'm a member of this group called Neighborhood Advisory Board.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we assess the community, and then we decide on the uppermost need of that community. Because we have a fund that's been released by federal government to DYCD, I don't know if you have heard of that, Department of Youth and Community Development. So we decide on how this money could be spent. So I do that. And currently I'm the adjutant in the military term, which is like the director of the veterans in Co-op City. So we had our meeting last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I met Ms. Cooper, was invited
mm-hmm.
to speak. And then she told us about this. I said, okay, let me come so that if I could have any message for the veterans in my area, that's how I end up here. She told us about this program, which now if I go, and I'll be able to explain to them better what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. So if young people who are joining the military today, what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, I tell them, if I have my way, I would say everybody should go through the military,
mm-hmm.
everybody. Because, you know, the discipline part of it, it makes you different when you come back out, when you're out of it and you're in the civilian. Because all these vices, all these attitudes, behavior you see out there, the military take it off you right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if you can't do it, but everybody believes there is not a place to mess around.
Yeah.
And they strip you of whatever who you are for you to conform to the job. By the time you come out, you're a reasonable person.
Mm-hmm.
So I will, you know, that's what I tell people. I go to school, said at least it's a contract. Everybody should be made to pass through the military, because by the time you come out, you are furnished. So that's my advice for them. And it's not, you know, losing anything. But the aspect of the military that I hate, which sometimes I have to think twice, is the fact that by the time you come out, you are nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there, if you see homeless people, maybe out of 10, 7 of them are veterans.
Mm-hmm.
If you see people that have no job, out of 10, 7 of them are veterans. Now, rate of suicide, very high. Because the experience you had in the military took you away from who you are. And sometimes when those things begin to play in your mind, you just feel like you have nowhere to go. Like somebody said, because I killed a lot of people, I don't deserve to live. So he killed himself, you know? And somebody felt like because of what I was made to do, they come back, they become somebody different. You know, you had a case of this Navy Yard guy, just like I was watching the video from the FBI release yesterday, and you look at him like he's playing hide and seek. I don't know if you saw it. Pick up his gun, took it, you know, in a backpack, come out of it, drove to a garage, take everything out, and he went to the place and he was hiding somewhere. He see people, he run to the, as if he was playing. Then he start shooting. This was somebody who was okay before. But now, going to the job, it has taken him away. So I believe the government could do better, especially these are elected officials. This is one of the reasons why I really wanted to run, because I know the senator in my place, the assembly guy, council person. I don't really see anything they do for veterans. That where every Pearl Harbor Day or whatever they call it, they organize a breakfast. And by the time you see their record of what they do, they say they're helping the veterans. That is not helping the veterans. These people need jobs. These people need they need housing. The veterans should be able to. I was fighting. If I had made that job, I would have fought for veterans being in the same class, like senior citizen. Whatever you think you give this senior citizen, anybody who is a veteran, either senior or not, they should attain that standard so that they could be treated that way. Because when you are gone from, when you are serving, you're taken away from the world. I told somebody, I had a degree before going, you know, some people say, okay, come to join, to go to school. No. If you don't go to military, still go to school. I had a degree before I went to the military. So if I had taken a job outside, I know how much I'll be paid compared to what I was being paid as when I went to the military. But I was comfortable in it because in your mind, you know, you're doing a service for your country. So how come when you not finish the whole thing, there's no, you know, premonition for you being there? And that is one thing I hate. So when she told me about what you guys are doing here, I feel like, yeah, I want to come. But it's, the government can do better. So when you look at that, it's now difficult for you to encourage somebody to join in. Especially when you see casualties coming in. Somebody has only one son, went to the military and the son died. What are they left with? Nothing. So that area makes it so difficult for you to say, okay, young people. But if it's just to join in and just get the training and come out, okay. But you don't know. Your time, you could be drafted anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's just, that might be the end of the story. So that is the big issue. The environment really needs to pay attention to the veterans, especially when you look into what they have done. World War I, II, Veterans War, Korean War, all those things. Now people are still stationed overseas. We're going about with our normal assignment here. But there are people that they are loaded, they're watching their shoulder everywhere. So I think the government can do better. If not, it's going to be tough. Because in every family, you have at least somebody somehow who is connected to a veteran. And when they come back from war, from service, the way they are being treated is not the best. They look like lunatics. You know, I was opportune to, just recently, before I came back to run for the office, I worked for IRS as a tax examiner. And I was in Austin, Texas, which is the capital of Texas. And I was surprised what I saw. See, in New York, you don't see too much of them because of the weather. But when I get down south, oh my God, I said, at the beginning, I said, I can't even live in this city because like every place, every junction, there's somebody with a cop begging for money. I'm a veteran, I'm this, I'm that. I said, then I was asking myself, why are there so many? Oh, they said, because the weather is good, so everybody have to come out. I said, they say in New York it's the same thing, but because the weather is not good, they hide somewhere in subway station, you know, you don't know. But why is it that we have to go through that? They have record. They serve the country. But now, it's not everybody that had the same attitude that I had before I came in. They just want to serve. They didn't have plan for after service. What do you do? They just want to serve. And most of them actually retired. But if you see what they're giving them today, it's nothing. In Co-op City, where I'm an officer there, these people are on fixed income. But every year, that rent keeps going up. Why should it be? So those are the challenges. That until government really pay attention to that, and that is what we do in American Legion. I'm a legionnaire. Every year we fight to make sure certain bills actually help the veterans. So we're not begging for it. We've served our time. I mean, if you go to Congress, come back, that is forever. So why not people that actually risk their life, their families are the suffering. You just barely do the ceremony and that's the end. No. So those are the challenges that we have. And, you know, we just pray God will intervene.
Is there anything else you want to add?
No, nothing else than for the government to really pay attention to the veterans. You know, this program you guys are doing, I really applaud it. It's very commendable because, you know, generations coming after will be able to read about it. Mm-hmm. But it's not just enough to read. It's a, we also want the people now to do something.
Yeah.
To do something. We're fighting in Kopsi to have a veterans housing. You know, these people have served their time coming there, and it has changed their lifestyle totally. You see them, you just happen to have a job, you hire a veteran, you could tell the difference. But it's not everybody that have that capability. The skill is there, but they're not able. Majority of people came back in boxes. Some people maimed, people disoriented. Some people, they can't do without drugs to even live a day, medication, a lot of them. So you should be able to have program that takes care of these people. Not just as if they're just normal. They're no more normal. No, they're not. Thank God I went in and came back. If you see somewhere here on my time, I have bullet lodged there in the muscle.
Wow.
And I want to do surgery, but since it's inside the muscle, it's not really affecting me. Just forget it. I just left it. But I'm glad I left it because now every time I see it, it tells me of, you know, what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody is as lucky as that.
Yeah.
Not everybody. So we could do more, and the whole world knows that. So that's just the main thing. And at the same, what I could also say is how to inculcate this curriculum in schools,
mm-hmm.
so that people that didn't even go will be able to know the history. In my country, I know a little bit of history about the military, because by the time I left the country, we have dictatorship. So I don't know, maybe that's why. But everybody have an ample knowledge of how we get to where we get to.
Mm-hmm.
But the government can do better. That's just what I would say. And like I said, I applaud what you guys are doing. It makes sure that some people's efforts, dreams, aspiration, is not going to die. And I just pray that the world will listen. Thank you. Many.